You're listening to Igniting Imagination, a podcast to spark the spirit within you from Wesleyan Impact Partners. Discover how you can join us in a spirit-led movement to bring about human flourishing grounded in love, generosity, and belonging by visiting ignitingimagination.org.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Igniting Imagination. I'm your host, Lise Greenwood, and joining me is fabulous co-host for this season, Shannon Hopkins. Hey, Shannon.
Hi, Lisa.
So this has been so fun doing this with you, Shannon. And I want to say, before we get into the episode, thank you. Thank you for everything that you bring, your imagination, your curiosity, connections and your willingness to share. And it has been such a joy these weeks getting to be together and delve into our topics and these conversations. So thank you, dear friend.
Well, it has been an honor and a privilege and a real gift, just a real gift to me.
Yeah.
So thanks for having me.
You bet. I am going to miss you in our regular conversations.
Likewise.
Today we have two very special guests with us from our learning and innovation team, Reverend Kathleen McShane. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Shannon.
And Derek Scott III. Hi, Derek.
What's up, Lisa, Shannon, Kathy? So excited to be here.
Yes, this is going to be fun. So let me tell you a little bit about Kathy and Derek. Kathy is a retired United Methodist elder from California with a new book out. And so go to our show notes and check it out. It is amazing. And she is a phenomenal facilitator and visionary for the church, always looking around the next corner to see what we need to be talking about and thinking about. And Derek is the conference co-lay leader in Florida and is an entrepreneurial campus minister, awesome MC, as we have learned recently, and lead organizer for our newest initiative, which we are calling Phygital Preaching Fellows. He's a deep thinker and encourager and connects the dots for us in remarkable ways. So Derek and Kathy, it is so good to have you both with us. You are part of our leadership learning and innovation team. And so in this episode today, we're going to kind of wrap up our season 10, if you will, by digging into this theme of facing reality and claiming leadership and discuss some of the key ideas that we've come across in these conversations with our guests. So we are so grateful for your engagement with us and for the ways that you share and use episodes to invite more conversations in your context. I mean, really, that's what we're doing this for, is to spark conversations with you, with your leadership teams, to spark the spirit that is already within you, that is at work in your organizations that you are leading. So with that, let's jump into our conversation today. So this theme, facing reality and claiming leadership, has been driving us over these last few weeks, and it has led to such interesting conversations and really dynamic responses from all our guests when we ask them to paint the picture of the reality that we are facing today as they see it. Now, all of our guests mentioned in some way polarization that's happening in our culture. And so let's start there and facing the reality of polarization in our country, but also in our churches. And I'm curious, you all, what thoughts you have about polarization, any insights or anything interesting you heard from our guests or that you're observing. Let's start there.
Well, I'll respond, Lisa, by saying I do think polarization came through as an issue that each of the guests this season was thinking about. But it kind of a broader thought that occurred to me as I re-listened to all of those episodes, which is that this idea of facing reality and claiming leadership, like in the reality of today, who wants to lead, right? It is a difficult reality. And, you know, I think what Margaret Wheatley has said to us in her writing is that the most we can hope for is for leaders, and what we need leaders to be is to lead in very small contexts, these islands of sanity she talks about. And it is an age, I think, that does not call for heroic leaders, kind of that traditional model of heroic leaders who bring all the answers. And that's what I heard in this season's guest, kind of an incredible humility, right? None of them were the listen to me, I've got the answers sort of leaders. And I think it, particularly in polarization and in opposition to the sort of authoritarian polarization that that makes us cautious about what's happening in the world, that is exactly what is needed, a kind of right-sized leadership for this time.
Kathy, I love that. And I want to pick up right where you left off there. I love listening to James Tallarico talk about his experience in the Texas House. And it's a space that the polarization is very present. And so I think on one hand, you have to name it, that it's there. And I think that's one thing that we've had to start doing is name the polarization maybe that's been there for a while, but also the new experiences of it. But also, and again, back to James's episode, I love the way that he refuses to give that polarization power. And so even his thoughts about every person is of sacred worth, even those I disagree with, it's literally taking the power out of this phenomenon that we're experiencing right now. And I think that's going to be really important that we sort of do these two things at once, where we name the fact that our world and the church and institutions are experiencing polarization at ways that didn't know that we could, but also refusing to give it so much power, refusing to bow down to it, and finding ways to say things like, there are no bad people, there are only bad ideas. Like, I really believe that, particularly James's episode, was really helpful for me in just sort of taking some of that power away from polarization while also recognizing that it is here, we need to name it.
Gosh, I loved that episode too. I mean, I could have talked to him for days. And it gave me a lot of hope for the world which we're living in and that Texas is in, right? But I like that, Kathy, what you said, like that right-sized leadership, right? Mm-hmm. We need right-sized leadership. And what he did was he kept in not just giving it power, not giving polarization power, but actually coming back to where do I really show up and love my neighbor? Who is my neighbor in the Texas House? Who is my neighbor in the classroom? And he kept bringing it back. And it's like, actually, we can all do that, right? And so with that, it's also this sense of leadership that's showing us the way, right? Like showing us how to live and lead in this moment.
Yeah.
I think.
Lisa, I'm curious about what you heard in this season that might be different from what you expected to hear about this issue of polarization.
So one of the things that I think is kind of a regular theme here with claiming reality is when we name something like polarization or some of the other realities that we're facing, is just how important it is to actually not give it power, but not ignore, right? There's almost a leaning in that is, and I think this is the nature of what it means to face reality. When we name it, we actually and lean into the reality that exists and not ignore and deny, then we actually are able to minimize that power not let it have unexpected power. And that got reinforced all throughout through several of the themes. And I don't know that that was surprising, but it was certainly a reminder because, and this speaks to how difficult it is to lead, we want to avoid those things that are polarizing. We want to avoid those things that are hard, because there's enough that's hard. And so if we can just kind of not lean into the things that are hard, then maybe it'll be better. But what we're saying is actually no. You know, And this is, I think, where Margaret Wheatley was cautioning us not to get too wrapped up in hope, right? You know, we can talk more about that. I don't know that I want to go there yet, but just how we can kind of get lost in our desire to not go the hard path, but leaning in is important.
You know, Aaron Kuechker had a great sentence in his episode with you, where he talked about our obligation to tell the truth about the challenges of our time. You know, It's not really our job to characterize hopelessness or not, or, you know, whether there should be a sense of hope or optimism about where the world is going. It's just our job to see and tell the truth about what is happening in the world right now.
So one of the other themes that came up a number of times, in a most obvious and profound way, with Pauline Boss in her term ambiguous loss, but really it came up over and over again, the role and presence of grief and loss in our current culture. And so I would love to hear you all speak about your thoughts about why is that so important as we think about our reality? Why did that keep coming up? What are your observations about that?
You know, Lisa, I listened to Amy Butler's episode, I think, three times. Mm. And part of it is I felt like there was so much that was sitting in her story. So much of the episode, yes, she's telling us about her ministry and her trajectory and different things that's happened, but she was telling us her story that has a great amount of loss. And I think one of my reflections, again, after listening to it three times, was that I wonder how many pastors and leaders tell their stories often. Like, they give us their... these are my three, you know, leadership tips, and this is like the, you know, the way I think about ministry or our sector or whatever. But do we actually hear their stories? Like, because if we get their stories, we're gonna get stories of loss. We're gonna get stories of pain. We're gonna get stories of, I don't know how I got here, and I honestly didn't know how I was going to take another step. And when Amy was talking about those moments where, like, getting out of bed was like moving the lead in her foot. And I think for me, particularly as I'm on this journey of leadership, I think it's becoming so important that our leaders actually share their lives with us, their journeys. And that's where I think this conversation about loss really becomes really important, because I think too many of us leaders present a celebrity profile. And so it just doesn't look like leadership has been hard. It doesn't look like there were sacrifices made. We find out about all of that stuff later on in the biography, right? Like, after they've done all these really incredible things, they're like, oh my gosh, you had a divorce that was really terrible. Oh my gosh, you lost all that money. Or like, oh my gosh, like, your mentor completely abandoned you. Like, we find out about this later on, when actually, and a lot of this is my work with college students over the years, like, they need to hear this, like, as it's happening. And so I just wonder in what ways, like, we're hearing stories like Amy's, and Pauline is trying to help us unpack loss, because we actually need these narratives right now. We need the transparency. We need the vulnerability. We need the reality. We don't need any more celebrity out of our leaders. And so, yeah, three times listening to Amy's episode specifically is kind of what I was wrestling with there.
I want to say yes and to what Derek just said. I think in part this issue of loss is important for leaders, is leaders of the church in particular. It's that we know the theology of death and resurrection and how God lives with our personal loss, but we somehow often we disclaim that theology for the institutions that we lead. Right? We don't allow, we are so fearful of that death and resurrection cycle for the institution, even though we claim it for ourselves personally and theologically. And I do think it is important for us to name that we believe and trust in God's power for the institution as well as for people. You know, my friend David Gregg, who is an officer in the American Baptist denomination, just wrote a piece that anybody could find called Death is an Invitation to the Church. He's speaking out of his own experience with cancer, ongoing, and saying, this is true. This nearness to death is true for our churches too, many of them. And he asks, are we willing to lose our institutional life as we have known it for the sake of something bigger that might come, that might grow after its death? And I think that's really an important question for leaders to deal with. And is it ambiguous? Yes, because we have a lot of power, I think, to keep the physical death from happening. But that's what we're doing, right? I think that's part of our naming reality.
Yeah, I have to say, I loved Pauline Boss's the conversation. It was transformative for me personally. I've thought a lot about grief the last few years and like letting an organization that I led for 15 years die and get reborn. Like, I've thought about the grief a lot, but somehow when she started talking about ambiguous loss as a forerunner to grief, I thought, wow, is that not what the church needs? This sense that there is something, this sense of loss and naming loss and living in the tension that kind of makes way for the grief. I don't know. It really has stuck with me. And then also when she talked about disenfranchised grief, when I was re-listening, it made me wonder, is that disenfranchised grief? How does that connect to polarization? So also like this sense that grief like can rip us apart. Like we often look at grief ripping families apart. And is that some of what's at play in the church right now that, I don't know. I found it really transformative. I think you're right. I think it is personal and institutional.
Institutional.
And how do we live in that? And how do we live in that when, like, Derek, I heard what you were saying, we need leaders to share their pain. Mm-hmm. Like, so often, because what's in our American DNA is mastery. Like, we mm-hmm. don't like to lose, right? Mm-hmm. We like to win. And so we like to show our power and our strength. Instead, what we have, and Kathleen, you pointed this out, is this gift of the season, which is lots of humility and lots of people kind of laying it all out there. So anyway, Lisa, what about you? Grief,
well,
loss?
There's so many threads to pull on, but just to pick up there and say, I think this role of vulnerability is important in terms of leaders and how we lead. I also want to pair with that Amy Butler's story is so beautiful because she's doing her work, right? She's holding the messy, the beautiful, and the terrible, and she's reflecting and she's weaving together her story. And I think it's important to think as we lead institutions and organizations that we do the things that Pauline Boss is talking about when we name mm-hmm. our loss and we create space for grieving and such. I hope you're hearing me sort of say, I think there's a real role for leaders in this and real-time authenticity for a leader can also be unhelpful for a community of faith if they're not also doing their deep formation work and spiritual work, right? And
that
came to mind as I was listening. And then I think, well, that's got to be true for organizations too, right? Listening to you, Kathy, and thinking, yes, if that is true for us as individuals and as leaders, that doing our spiritual work and our psychological work and our body work and all the things that help us to really name and process our loss and our grief and our very real lives, that has got to be true for organizations, you know, and the extent to which we do not do that work will kind of create a much more fragile institution and organization. And one that I think we'll have to look at where its grounding is. And if we really, really believe the redemptive work of Christ or not, you know, right. If we really are resurrection people. And so I
was just going to say, in resurrection, we may not recognize it when we see it because it may look so different than the forms we've seen.
Right. There we Absolutely. Go. There's some scripture.
Yeah. It pings for me as well some of the stuff that Randy Woodley was talking about and the ways, and I want to be careful with my language here, but the ways that often whiteness does not allow us, individuals or institutions, to face these realities. And I just think about the ways that I know the spaces that I grew up in as a African-American man in the South of the United States, I was at funerals at 5 years old because that's part of the life cycle. And that was not something that I was going to be shielded from. And I remember when I first like heard of my white friends who had never been to a funeral and like, how'd that happen? Like, how'd you get to your 20s? And I just wonder if there's also, again, pointing to what Randy was trying to say, this denial of even like the ability to be connected to creation and our natural life cycle of birth to death. I wonder in what ways as individuals, as well as institutions, we've got to do some decentering of a white perspective of the world so that we can actually experience the beauty that actually comes from celebrating a life that no longer is, an institution that no longer is, but now making room for the thing that is emerging, the person that is emerging, the space that is emerging out of death, the phoenix, right? Out of the ashes, we rise. Well, we don't make room for that if we're not willing to do that deep work that you were talking about, Lisa.
So true. And I want to kind of lean into this part of the conversation with you all, because I think the reality of the institutional church right now is that it's facing this time of very real loss, but also an emergence that's happening. This beautiful image that you've used of the phoenix, but also we talk a lot in our circles around a kind of emerging mixed ecology, understanding that the inherited models of church are going to continue. And they cannot be the whole picture. We need biodiversity in our ecosystem, if you will, right? And that in that emergence of new forms of ministry, there's also a sense of kind of fear and scarcity and loss that happens with some of the folks that are deeply committed to the inherited models. And so we're facing this kind of reality of decline and emergence like this that is happening all at the same time. And I'm curious about your perspective on that and what does that open up in terms of possibilities for the church today and where does that take you all?
You know, I am someone who loves this innovation movement. I have been a wholehearted supporter and participant in it even. And I wonder whether us thinking that this is what the emergence, what the resurrected church is going to look like, is not us sort of racing to answers, right? It's the 2-week version of the wilderness story instead of the 40-year version.
Yeah. Hello.
As I've been listening, and I know you have too, Lisa, this year to the Emerged podcast, the sort of the story of the emerging church that sort of rose in the early part of the 21st century and then kind of declined again. I've been conscious that this is how things happen. We think something is right for a little while, and then we learn more, and we realize we didn't know, we didn't have as full a picture as we thought we did at the moment of what will come next and where God is leading us. And the truth is, our imagination is always smaller than God's, right? So even when we think we've got it, right, the picture that God wants for us, there's always a next step. So I do think there are signs of new life. There are. But is this what life itself for the church will look like in the future? I don't think any of us should be too quick to claim that we see and know that.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm with you, Kathy. And I like this phrase you just used about, like, are we racing for the answer? Like, is it like racing to think we've got it figured out? And I wonder how that sits, Derek, with your image of going to funerals. And what I like actually make, like, slowing down, right? Like, actually maybe what we need is to de-accelerate. Like, innovation, the push for innovation can speed us up, or the quest for answers makes us want to race to the end. We want to get to the end, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the gift of Andy Root's work. I have to say, when
that's what I was
first
thinking about
saw
too.
his the title of his book, like The Church After Innovation, I wanted to go like, oh my gosh, we don't need that book, right? And then it's like, oh no, we desperately do need it, because innovation in itself isn't the answer. And and I don't know that we do know. I think it is this resurrection. Like, I think we're starting to see some things. I think it'll be a long time from now before we look back and really understand what we've seen. Yeah.
This invitation to waiting, like waiting, that is actually innovative. And it deeply rooted in who we are in our Christian narrative, and or at least who we're called to be, maybe not who we always are, story after story of not waiting, but the invitation to wait, to rest, to listen, to discern, and not jump too quickly.
Lisa, there's so many thoughts going in my head as we talk about this. I'm back to Kendah Creasy Dean saying to all of us, innovation for the sake of love, and that the turn that sort of called many of us to. But it also takes me to Dave Odom's episode. And I remember listening to his interview with y'all, and I was actually like cleaning dishes and doing the thing that you do, like listening to a podcast as you're doing other things, because we're all multitasking. And when he started going in on is survival and health really the point, it stopped me. Like, I had to turn off the water, and like I had to stop my multitasking.
Yeah, wow.
Because I started thinking about all the spaces that I, you know, between Florida as well as TMF and all the things that I'm doing, like, wait, am I healthy for what? Innovation for who? And also, like, if it's just about the organization and organizational longevity, like, is that really what Jesus got all of us in this for? Like, and I do wonder how many of our churches and denominations and religious institutions were created with this idea, we're going to be around for hundreds of years, not we're going to serve this specific group of people with faithfulness. And I just really appreciated Dave Odom's episode, because it was, I was not expecting to be stopped in my tracks. But that's definitely, and that's slowing down. That's that de-escalation. And it's this reframing of whether it's continuing an attractional model or it's trying to think of new ways of doing church, like, and serving people. Like, we've got to really come back to purpose and got to come back to the why. And to ping what James Tallarico said, it's got to come back to loving neighbor. And I'm wondering for myself, just me speaking for myself, I'm wondering how many of my endeavors are really at base about loving neighbor. And that's doing some stuff in me right now.
Yeah. Ouch. And yes, right? Yeah. So as we kind of wrap up our conversation, or at least get close to that, I want to go back to where we began in this season with Meg Wheatley. And she really rocked us a bit. I mean, she told a bit. What? We even had a whole episode analyzing that episode. telling us to stop clinging to hope, that it's distracting us from the harder, deeper work. And, she even said, we're addicted to hope, and pushed us. Stop being addicted to hope. Oh my. So, we've been sitting with this for a couple of months now, and I'm curious of what you're thinking now about this idea of being addicted to hope and stop clinging to hope. And if you could just sort of speak into the role of hope for us as Christian leaders right now in this environment, I deeply treasure each of you, and I'm so excited to have this little piece of the conversation.
I'll just say, I'm so grateful you asked this, Lisa, because I've been thinking about this for months.
I know you have, Kathy, I'm sure. Okay.
I'm gonna take issue with our dear mentor, Margaret Wheatley, on this. I deeply trust Margaret Wheatley's sense of life and depth of spirituality and all of that. But we have a long tradition and a long narrative tradition that includes hope in our Christian tradition. And I'm not quite ready to give it up. And I think maybe this is a definitional issue. Seems to me what she was talking about was hope for something. And what she was inviting us to do, perhaps, was to sort of release the outcome of what we do. Mm. I think that is different than hope in something. We have hope in God and in God whom we know through this story of who God has been in the world for a very long time. That I don't think we want to let that go. I'm willing to be addicted to that hope. Right? Yes. And so I want to say, there's something else. Margaret Wheatley's work, and that this conversation sent me to the work of Michael Dowd, who's written Post-Doom. And he, like Margaret Wheatley, operated from the sense that in some ways, particularly with respect to climate change and the future of the earth as we have known it, we're beyond hope for that, right? He calls his work Post-Doom. And I heard him ask on a podcast, so why do we keep doing this work? And I wondered that for myself, right? When I lose hope for the church as it is now or whatever it is, why do I keep doing this work? And what he says and what I find resonant for myself is you do it not knowing what the outcome will be, not knowing if it will make one bit of difference, but you do it because the work itself is holy work. Right? Mm. This is the work we are called to do, no matter how it comes out. And I find great hope in that. So I want to hold hope for a little longer.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Kathy. I did appreciate Margaret Wheatley sort of shaking me about hope and helping me personally to decommoditize it, if I could say it that way. Mm. to not think about hope as something that is so easily sort of embedded or integrated. But like you, I feel like she raised the value of it for me by challenging, you know, are we addicted to it? And so I do appreciate sort of that take. At the same time, I'm reminded of people who know me, they won't be shocked. They're like, this scripture in Hebrews, you know, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things unseen. And I connect hope to things I don't see. I really do. And I do wonder if I'm just too sure that I know what I'm hoping for. So much of what Kathy said just resonates with me on this, that the hope piece, I don't know what that outcome actually is. I just trust that I'll get to see it in some sense. And it may not necessarily even be seeing it in this lifetime, but I'm investing in the next generation. I'm investing in the church. I'm investing in our world being a better place, not because I know exactly what my investment's going to look like, but because, like Kathy said, it's holy work. And it being holy means that it matters. It doesn't matter because I know what it's going to look like. It matters because it's holy. It matters because mm-hmm. we're giving this to God. And so I feel like voices like Margaret come in to sort of shake me out of this trance of, I know exactly how this is going to work out. And I become more of a steward of my gifts, a steward of my time, a steward of podcasts, right? I don't know what this actually looks like. That's not what this is about. This is about me trusting the one who holds the future and all things in their hands. So I'm really grateful, even if I'm not necessarily completely buying in, I'm really grateful for Margaret coming in and raising the value of hope for me.
Yeah.
Kathy, I'm so grateful just for you to name. I'm not ready to give up on hope yet, because it really struck me when she said it. I'm like, I am like, it's hope has been so at the core of like what's gotten me into this work. And I have been wrestling. So Derek, when you talk about shaking, I do feel like it really shook me. Am I too? And she said to me, like I said, but it's surely if we do this and do this, she's no, you're addicted to hope. Stop it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, but I am, because I think, you know, I think we can make a difference. But yet actually we can't be outcome driven in this moment. We have to surrender it. And I think that's a gift. And as somebody that's talked a lot about measurement, and right, like we've got to measure the right things, we've got to be impact oriented, that actually we've got to make sure that's not our focus, that the outcome isn't the focus, that the presence, when she said the gift of the leader is to see the glass of water and not to ask how full or how empty it is, but to say, wow, there's water. Mm. Who needs it? Mm. And that moves us to a presence. That leads us to the work that's right in front of us. And so often when we're focused on the big thing, we're disconnected from the person right in front of us. And I think for me, that was the gift of like, actually, and that kind of the small, the present, the right now, and just be there. And that is holy. That brings us into holy moments.
So you all, on a season where we have faced reality in some really powerful and often hard, hard ways, you all have painted this picture of hope that is deeply rooted in our belief that God is up to something. And I am so grateful to be on this journey with you and with all those who are listening, that we are about joining God in this amazing work. So by the grace of God, may it be so. Thank you, dear friends.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Shannon and Derek.
It's been great.
Thank you all.
Igniting Imagination is a production of the Learning and Innovation team at Wesleyan Impact Partners, with excellent editing support from Truthwork Media. Follow us on social media at Wesleyan Impact Partners. Visit our website at ignitingimagination.org. and share episodes with friends and colleagues. Our hope is that these conversations can spark imagination in your context. I'm Blair Thompson. On behalf of all of us at Wesleyan Impact Partners, thanks for listening.